happy stories from small town Canada lined up for you. Our first story will be about a local historian lobbying local council to establish an official village fungus, and she has an idea for a potential nominee.
I looked it up and nobody has an official fungus. Why can't we start a trend? For me, it was just a lighthearted way of acknowledging how special this community is and trying to bring a smile to people's faces.
We'll go country hopping and settle in Kingston, Waterloo, and Haliburton to tell you about the comic book Witch Hazel.
A bunch of people even said it was like the best comic of the week, you know, this little indie book that no one's ever heard of, best comic of the week, better than Batman. And I'm like, whoa. Oh, yeah, take that, Batman.
Also about the Empty Soup Bowl fundraiser and the fifth annual Dining Trail and Tasty Countryside events.
Just fills my heart the way this community comes together and just helps everybody. So it's amazing stuff.
Youth Unlimited and a retail store team up to outfit local students with new school supplies.
It's hard. As a parent, you feel guilty if you can't provide that for your family.
And in downtown Winnipeg, the Dalnavert Museum marks its 130th anniversary.
We think it's really important for people to be able to not just read about history, but to actually come and see it and experience it for themselves in a more tangible way.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello, welcome again. Nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Hassan. I'll be with you for the next half hour. We'll kick off this episode of Viewpoints with humor and good vibes, thanks to a local historian, Dawn Copeman, in the BC village of Cumberland. She felt it was time to combat the world's gloom and doom, and she lobbied the village council to establish an official village fungus. She hopes that the village of Cumberland can become the first municipality in the world to do so. Copeman recommends the red-belted conch to honor a local historic figure and to recognize the village's unique spirit. The fungus itself has been described as a small-scale disturbance agent, which Copeman feels represents the village that, in her words, has always punched above our weight when it comes to being outsized. The Cumberland Village Council has yet to make an official decision, but pressure is on. Copeman hopes to unveil the official village fungus at the annual Cumberland Fungus Fest this October. In Nanaimo, British Columbia, journalist Heather Watson spoke with Copeman.
I just think, for me, there's just so much gloom and doom in the world right now that it's just, for me, it was just a lighthearted way of acknowledging how special this community is and trying to bring a smile to people's faces.
Copeman says she was walking in the Cumberland Forest one day, idly thinking about symbols to build community, when the idea of an official village fungus occurred to her.
I was also thinking about the provincial flower of Newfoundland, which is a pitcher plant, which is a carnivorous plant, you know, so there's this juxtaposition. And so I thought, if I propose a fungus that has historic connections to Cumberland, but it's a decomposer, it's not really a forester's friend, but it's also a forest recycler. It is about rejuvenation, about the continuity of forest. So I thought it was a really appropriate proposal for the village.
And she has just the fungus for the job, a red-belted conch scientifically named Fomatopsis mountsae. The name is a tribute to Dr. Irene Mounts, a pioneering scientist in mycology and plant pathology, who was born and raised in Cumberland before moving to Vancouver, where she later began her academic career. Her father was the first mayor of Cumberland and a mill owner.
So she was around wood her entire life. She was in Haida Gwaii in the 1920s getting conch samples, you know, as a young woman. You know, it's just, and it was definitely a road less traveled. And she just spent her whole life studying tree pathogens.
It isn't just the connection to Dr. Mounts that Copeman sees connecting this red-belted conch to Cumberland. It has its own characteristics that she sees as befitting the village.
I want to call it a decomposer, but it's actually a forest recycler, and it attacks the heartwood and the cellulose within the trees themselves, diseased trees, and it basically brings it back down to very simplified organic matter to rejuvenate the forest and grow more trees.
Coatman says this fungus has been referred to as a, quote, small-scale disturbance agent, end quote, because one small fruiting body can take down the commercial viability of an entire tree.
I think that Cumberland has always punched above our weight when it comes to being outsized in our, not maybe just our opinion, but, you know, we have such heart in this community. I mean, we bought a forest. You know, that's got to be something that you've got to be proud of. It's an amazing community. I've lived here over 30 years and still love it.
Cumberland Village Council discussed the proposal in a meeting September 2nd, where Mayor Vicki Brown referred to the petitioner as, quote, the legendary Don Coatman. The conversation was favorable toward recognizing a figure from Cumberland's history, but hesitant to make a decision naming an official fungus. One concern raised by Councillor Nick Ward was that, as Cumberland has no other official items, it is unknown how much work this would create for staff. Councillor Troy Therrien's concern was whether this is something more than one person is interested in, or whether requests for various official village items will be coming in from individuals one at a time.
I think I need to have a groundswell of support that says, yes, we'll support this position. This is a unique community. We have to have a unique way of telling the world how unique we are. And by having the first municipal official fungus would be the way to do that, obviously.
Don Coatman adds that if the village decides against naming an official village fungus, there are other routes available.
I did discover during my research that that the BC government does not have an official fungus. So we might just bump it upstairs and go all in for the BC government, because they have a fossil. And the fossil was actually initiated by people in Courtney for the Traskosaurus.
If Cumberland did name the red-belted conch the official village fungus, Coatman has some fun ideas for ways to incorporate it into the village identity, anywhere from stickers to t-shirts with clever puns to playful uniforms.
Maybe even epaulettes that the village officials could wear at meetings that would look like bracket fungus. I mean, the possibilities are endless. I mean, you don't want to make government a joke, but I think to have a little bit of levity is a good thing.
Coatman would like to see the world's first official village fungus unveiled at the annual Cumberland Fungus Fest, taking place October 2nd through 5th. Run by the Cumberland Community Forest Society, all proceeds from the Fungus Fest support land protection, stewardship, and education. Cumberland has a unique relationship with its forest, which the Cumberland Community Forest Society has purchased piece by piece from logging companies, protecting it for future generations in perpetuity. This mature forest feeds biodiversity, allowing flora, fauna, and fungi to thrive in the village's own backyard. Could an official fungus represent the culture and community of this forest town?
If people want to support my initiative, I would suggest you contact the village council, and that would be info@cumberland.ca, and just say, I support Don's initiative, and your name and your address, and that's it. You don't have to say anything else. And if we get 50 emails, that might trigger something within the... I know that it's gone back to staff, and I really don't want it to make it a big work. I don't want to make it a make work item. It would be nice if it was a nice, easy process, but because, of course, it hasn't been done before, we can make the process.
Thanks to Heather Watson. And comic book artist Colton Fox and his co-creator Beige Bloom are also hoping to make the world a better place as they celebrate the worldwide release of their award-winning comic series, Witch Hazel. Witch Hazel follows the adventure of Hazel, a young witch living in Toronto who takes on supernatural odd jobs. The comic started strong in 2022, with the first edition being named Sequential Magazine's Best Canadian Comic by popular vote. But the newest issue is now available to readers across the globe after being picked up by indie publisher Silver Sprocket. Fox and Bloom are now touring across Ontario. Christina Laurie had a chat with Colton Fox. Here's part of that interview.
With the Silver Sprocket release, it's you know, reaching so many more people, and so many more people are like, you know, from different parts of the world are saying how much they love it and like saying such kind things. And a bunch of people even said it was like the best comic of the week, you know, this little indie book that no one's ever heard of, best comic of the week, better than Batman. And I'm like, whoa, yeah, take that, Batman. So that was that meant a lot. Yeah, I'm just really excited to have, you know, like grown the audience, seen people's reactions to the comic and seeing how much it's meant to them. And, you know, like Hazel's like a queer woman of color, and like the artistic team, like Beige, is part of that demographic. And so, like, you know, it's getting kind of hairy out there for a lot of people from different communities. And, you know, that's, it's really heartbreaking to see. And so I'm happy that, like, I've been able to put this comic out there that is, you know, full of joy, like good messages, you know, magic, comedy, action, fantasy, romance, like just like having this like fun comic out there, you know, just trying to make the world a little bit of a better place through it and through the artwork and through the storytelling, like having that, having the larger reach to make, you know, a bit of a difference, however small that might be, like that really brings me a lot of joy. And really fuels my passion to keep making more, because we have so many more Witch Hazel stories. It's, you know, there's so many written and so many in the backlog that, you know, we really just are excited to have the means to produce more and to share more instead of having to wait for me to save up enough paychecks to get the next issue out.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're attuned to Viewpoints.
It will be a delicious month in Waterloo's rural townships as the 5th annual Tasty Countryside event kicks off on September 15 with the Countryside Harvest Meal. There will also be a 10-day dining trail on September 25th to highlight the township's restaurants. The initiative seeks to support farm-to-table dining in the region while putting a focus on local food security. A portion of the Harvest Meal ticket sales go to support local food banks. In Kitchener, Ontario, Dan Keller spoke with Economic Development and Tourism Officer for the Township of Woolwich, Curtis Wells.
So between the four townships, we've reached out to local restaurants and offered to get chefs included. So we're offering to include as many or as few chefs as want to be involved. So we wanted to make sure that across the four townships that everybody had an opportunity to be equally represented. And so chefs are pretty much through direct outreach as well as building awareness of this program since 2020. Chefs have been kind of picked out, and we always encourage new chefs as well if they haven't been a part of the program previously, and we also encourage repeat chefs to join in as well. We're always looking to make new connections and get more people involved.
Speaking of food, Soup is up to give a hand to the search that is the supportive initiative for residents in the county of Haliburton. The Haliburton Legion is also involved, as it will host for the second year in a row its Empty Bowls fundraiser. That's an event that brings handmade bowls made by local potters, delicious soup donated by local restaurant, and the community together for a great cause. Michelle Anton, a potter herself, borrowed the idea from another community and then organized the first Empty Bowls event last fall. Elizabeth Oakley spoke with Anton and Mark Waller, president of the Haliburton Legion Branch 129.
Last year we raised $10,000. $10,000 we donated to Search Community Kitchen for the Four Seas Food Bank and Fuel for Warmth. Last year we had one sitting, 220 tickets sold, and we had a silent auction too, so we raised quite a bit from that. This year, because we sold out 3 weeks early, the tickets, we thought, okay, we don't want to turn anyone away. So now we have 300 tickets, 150 for each sitting.
Every time we do something, a fundraiser for whatever, the community comes together and supports us and supports the community. It just fills my heart the way this community comes together and just helps everybody. So it's amazing stuff.
You buy a ticket, you come in, you'll see all of the bowls that have been generously donated by our local potters. We've got about 20 potters who are involved. So you get to pick your bowl. You go inside. All the soups have been generously donated by our local restaurants. So you could go and taste test as many soups as you want. And then we've got local musicians are going to be entertaining you while you're trying out the soups. And you go home with your bowl.
The Empty Bowls of Fundraiser will take place on September 20th. And Elizabeth Oakley kept busy as she brought another story to us. The Youth Unlimited organization has partnered up with the owners of Home Hardware to provide free backpacks and school supplies for another school year. She spoke with Leanne Young of Youth Unlimited, who says it's just one way to take the financial burden off parents who might be struggling to make ends meet.
Obviously, there's a need all across Ontario and Canada, really. Like, it's not just a rural town situation. Like, lots of families are struggling with just making ends meet. Yesterday we had a mom in here who said her and her husband both have good paying jobs, and they have several kids, and they are like, we are like barely making ends meet, and it's like the economy is hitting everybody.
The backpacks come with everything students need to be prepared for another school year. Young says taking away the expense of school supplies, like backpacks, is something she and her husband say help build confidence in students and take away the stigma for those whose families struggle financially. The gratitude, she says, is palpable.
We were open yesterday to receive, like, for people to come get backpacks, and yeah, parents were just over the moon, just happy to be able to give their kid a brand new backpack. So inside the backpacks is paper, pencil crayons, erasers, scissors, ruler, like pretty much everything you need to go back to school. So it's great. That's one thing parents don't have to worry about. There's three different sizes, a whole range of different colors, some just plain black and gray, but and luckily, like, those straps adjust, right, so you can make it work. But yeah, it's great that it comes with three different sizes.
Young says as a parent, she knows how expensive life is and the challenges of raising children in this economy. The backpack program feeds her soul just as much as it does those families Youth Unlimited is helping.
No, it's huge. And yesterday I just felt overwhelmed with joy that as I like got to talk to kids and parents and just see like that relief off their shoulders and just how grateful they were to be able to get that for their kids, because it's hard. As a parent, you feel guilty if you can't provide that for your family. Our whole thing at Youth Unlimited is that we see the hope and potential of every young person and want to see them reach their full potential.
Since Youth Unlimited is a registered charity, they rely on donations to operate. That's why they're hosting the Youth Unlimited Benefit Golf Tournament on Thursday, September 18th from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Halliburton Highlands Golf Club. For more information about the free backpacks or to register for the tournament, visit yfc.ca/Halliburton Highlands.
Thanks to Elizabeth Oakley in Halliburton, Ontario.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
One of Winnipeg's most distinctive heritage sites is celebrating a major milestone this year. The Dalnavert Museum recently marked the 130th anniversary of the museum's construction. Built in 1895, Dalnavert Museum, designed to reconnect Manitobans with their past, was once the family home of Hugh John MacDonald, son of Canada's first prime minister. Over the decades, it has been transformed in numerous ways and phased. It has been a home, a boarding house, and in the 70s rescued by the Manitoba Historical Society and then turned into the Dalnavert Museum. Here's Ryan Funk in Winnipeg.
Yeah, we think it's really important for people to be able to not just read about history, but to actually come and see it and experience it for themselves in a more tangible way.
Explained Samantha McShadow, the museum's services manager.
And by experiencing history in this way, we hope that as a community and as a society that we'll be able to learn from our past in order to create a better shared future.
Built in 1895, Dalnavert was once the family home of Hugh John MacDonald, son of Canada's first prime minister. Over the decades, it has been transformed in numerous ways.
So it's been through a lot of different phases. It used to be a house where people lived in, and then it was a rooming and boarding house for a period of time before it was abandoned. And then it was rescued by the Manitoba Historical Society in the 70s, and then they turned it into the museum that it is now today.
The anniversary weekend was part of Dalnavert Days, a community festival first launched for the museum's 50th anniversary. McShadow noted that the event brought in families, curious first-time visitors, and longtime neighborhood residents who were astonished to discover a museum in their own backyard.
They didn't know this place existed until a weekend like this, and they come by for the first time. They're like, oh, I have to come back. Like, it's so special to get to watch people interact with the house and see history come to life for them in this way. And it's been really wonderful to have that positive community engagement.
An exciting moment for the museum, the milestone also highlights the importance of preserving Winnipeg history. McShadow said if efforts aren't made, these landmarks could easily disappear.
Well, definitely Dalnavert is not alone in our continual struggle to stay afloat and stay open. Funding from all levels of government is important. If you have a government official on hold and you are looking to chat to them about the heritage budget, that's something that's always important for us.
While support comes from government grants and an endowment fund with the Winnipeg Foundation, community donations and volunteer hours remain crucial.
So we have a really robust community of about 50 to 70 regular volunteers. Some of those people, they're the people you're meeting when you come in. They're at the front desk. They're in the house giving tours. But then we also have people like our board. We have a collections registrar who does all of her work as a volunteer. Our garden team are volunteers. So that's another way that like you can help support us or other heritage sites is if you have some time to give. Most places are able to make use of you in some way. And that people element is so important to just bringing this place to life, but also to keeping everything running.
Looking ahead, Dalnavert has plans to continue engaging visitors with hands-on immersive programming. Upcoming highlights include Halloween events, a Christmas lineup, specialty tours such as Dalnavert on Drugs, which explores Victorian-era medicine, and collaborations with local artists for Culture Days.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting for people to get to learn about different experiences in different ways because, you know, you can read about gruel, but it's certainly an experience to try it. But it helps to showcase to different parts of your brain, like what's going on.
Through these efforts, McShadow said that Dalnavert strives to make history more than a subject in a book. I'm Ryan Funk.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Abakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
We finally take you to the Big Skeena River, where a love letter to the Bulkley Valley was filmed for singer-songwriter Mark Perry's music video and his song Big Skeena River. The filming took place among the wonderful scenery of Vanderson Flats. That's at the confluence of BC's Bulkley and Skeena Rivers. The Roche de Boule, or Ball Rock, is the mountain that looms over the stony shore. The views from there are really spectacular. No wonder they chose that location. Mark Perry was not alone on the set. Before the event, he had sent out an invitation on his social media to the communities of Hazleton and Smithers to join him at the river on a Sunday eve to shoot the video. Nearly 60 people showed up and were handed the lyrics to sing along. Journalist Pamela Hassan was on location and brought this back to us.
On Sunday, September 7th, at Anderson Flats, where the Skeena River meets the Bulkley, stood a group of 60 people in a circle around a man with a guitar. That man was celebrated Smithers songwriter Mark Perry.
Hi, I'm Mark Perry, and I'm from Smithers, or Telqua High Road, somewhere near there.
But tell me a little bit about what I just witnessed and what some of our listeners are going to hear a snippet of today.
Well, it's actually, it was Eli's idea to do this, and which is an amazing idea, to come and sing a song about the Skeena River on the Skeena River, where the Bulkley meets the Skeena, surrounded by awesome people, on a beautiful day, and one of the most, like, seriously, this is one of the most beautiful places in BC. It truly is.
And so many of your songs, iconically, people know the words and memorize them and sing them with you as well. So what does that do for you as a performer to kind of share that and not just have the spotlight where you're the only singer?
Oh, I love it. The energy and the feedback you get from people is what drives you, right? Like, it's so an amazing thing. I've been very fortunate as a songwriter type that people relate and like what I do. And it's, you know, the energy you get off people when you play, it just takes you to the moon sometimes, you know?
Absolutely. I think I'm going to jump in the river after this.
That's a good idea.
I'm Elijah Larson. I'm a videographer and producer and musician from Hazleton and Smithers. This is a shoot that I've wanted to do for 3 years. Ever since I was familiar with the song Big Skeena River by Mark and started to get more into videography, you sort of get to this point where you're like, oh, I could just make things happen. And lo and behold, we're here with like 50, 60 people came out, which was amazing. And so we all just sang big to Mark's Big Skeena River tune.
Would you say that this maybe feels typical for something that happens in Hazleton, or is this kind of a rarity to happen on the river here?
I would say it's a rarity. Mm-hmm. I'd say it doesn't happen very often.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Heck yeah.
My name is Lori. I'm a backup singer in Mark Perry's band.
And that's official now, is it?
I am almost paid to do this.
Oh, okay. And how did that feel to sing with, this looks like to be about like 60 people. How did that feel to sing together?
It's kind of magical. Yeah. And it's really such a special, sacred location as well.
Yeah.
And I look around, it's like, this is my community. I know all these people. It was really beautiful. I can't wait to see the final video.
My name is Thomas Roper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what did you just participate in here?
Well, believe it or not, my wife and I are Mark Perry groupies.
Okay.
And we've been following Mark for now over 30 years. And he actually came to our wedding 30 years ago.
Well done.
We were very lucky. He didn't know us. He just knew there was a party. He wanted to show up.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. So we've been kind of tailing him wherever he goes. This is probably the best thing I've ever seen.
Now, you're saying this is the best thing, but for people who weren't here and who are just tuning in, describe what this was.
Well, what's happened here is one of the nicest camping spots in the country is Anderson Flats. Mm-hmm. And it's just off of Southtown.
Mm-hmm.
And the vistas are overwhelming. On top of that, we've got the Skeena River going by.
Yeah.
And as Mark calls it, the Big Skeena River.
Mm-hmm.
We're good at saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the confluence of the Bulkley.
What does the song mean to you?
Well, believe this or not, this is really hard to believe, Pam, but when I hear that song, This River Brings Life, I almost start choking up. Because it truly does mean something to me. The life of the salmon and the river itself.
That is it for this episode of Viewpoints. Thanks to the LGI team and to our many journalists today, Elizabeth Oakley, Christina Lori, Pamela Hassan, Ryan Funk, Rick Conrad, Heather Watson, and Dan Keller. Our national editors are Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. It was a pleasure to have you with us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Radio@frequencynews.ca. diverse